Welcome to Stranger Still,
podcast where we answer the questions you never thought to ask.
I am Nick Wood.
I'm John Beacon.
And today we have a very special guest to help us discuss the world of video games, something we talked a lot about, but kind of a different angle this time. Joining us is Genova Chen. Welcome.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, I'm honored to be here.
Well, thank you very much. For those that don't know, you seem to have a game company of sorts.
Yeah, it's that game company, you know. Many people don't know what I'm talking about when I say I work at that game company.
It's like
I feel like that wouldn't get old, though. It's that game company.
Yeah.
Although a couple of years ago, there was a company called This Game Studio.
Oh no!
That was like really funny. We both went on to the Apple stage. They did it a year before us. It was like it was almost the comical when they showed up. Like, what?
Did you guys like brawl in the streets with like switchblades?
No, we didn't. I mean, the game we are making is so different, so there's really no competition.
Well, yeah, there's the games that you guys produce are
different from everyone.
Yeah. Like, we're going to talk about what this episode is going to focus on is selflessness and altruism in video games. And when people think of video games, myself included, I think the first ones that come to mind are probably like the top sellers, shooters or sports games or whatever. But you guys have carved out this little corner for yourselves of
that has become a giant corner
of just peaceful games. So why don't you tell us a little bit
you mean walking simulators?
Oh, they are far beyond walking
simulators. I can't tell you how disappointed I am walking in real life now, Genova.
Well, I heard Death Stranding has done a pretty good job of walking. And it's actually fun.
Yeah. Well, you guys have mastered it. So can you tell our audience, for those that don't know, a little bit about yourself and that game company?
So to put it short, many people started their business because they see an opportunity or they want to grow something to be very big and financially successful. We didn't really start from there. We started a company because 14 years ago, we made some student game called Cloud. It made many people cry, and they write email to tell us that please consider turn this game into a commercial game, because people around the world deserve to know that games are not just about guns and footballs and competitions. Right. Games can be something positive. If it wasn't for those letters that's coming from Australia, UK, Japan, America, I would have never thought to start a company. I was hoping to work for somebody, you know, like never thought about starting a company. And the other very important thing is they said, please tell everybody who's involved in this cloud project that you are beautiful people. I grew up my entire life, no one said I'm a beautiful person, ever. You know, not even today. Like, my parents or my wife would be very, very cautious of saying that I'm a beautiful person.
Yeah, counter argument here. I did pick a very beautiful picture of you for the Reddit group today. Just glorious. The lights hitting you just great. Looks but sundown.
Right. So I knew at that point something that we did in that game was gold, was something that's truly valuable, that the people are willing to say that the people involved are beautiful.
Yeah.
And they want us to make a commercial company. And so ultimately, we followed their wish that we want to make a game company that let the world know that game isn't just the typical violence and, you know, kind of a quick adrenaline rush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But games can be beautiful. Essentially, that's why we started the company.
Yeah.
And we are kind of trying to see our company as more of a activist. You know, we're trying to make more people aware of games and fall in love with games. That's what we do, you know.
Yeah.
It's a movement rather than a company.
And it really translates so well and so beautifully. Like I mentioned before, we were going over like, oh, here's some stuff we're going to talk about. And I had played Journey and I had played Flower and I'd loved them so much. But then I'm on my phone now. It's all I had at the time. I was very depressed. I throw up Sky and I'm going through an entire level where someone's grabbing my hand and guiding me through a cave. I'm running out of light. People are swooping down to save me. And then we finally get to a bench and we don't speak the same language.
Yeah. I was like, just wait. The Google Translate is coming. We're working.
Oh, really? Nice.
That's awesome.
But it didn't matter at that point because we had a human experience that we would not have otherwise because we don't speak mm-hmm. the same language.
Yeah, there's a kind of a theme to a lot of the games that have come from that game company, which is like incredible storytelling through almost no words. And I think that lends a lot to human experiences like that. But so you said that you view it more as activism or spreading mm-hmm. art, if you will.
Yeah, I told people I'm a video game evangelist. That I want more people to love this medium, and so that's why my day job is trying to, you know, do that with our games yeah. to make more people be aware of game and respect games and love games, you know. Yeah. That's also why I participate in co-founding Annapurna, so we can invest capitals to help artists who are trying to do the same things, you know,
beautiful.
To
yeah.
sponsor these games. So yeah, that's my life. That's my career drive. And, you know, I hope that I do what I say.
Yeah. So if you don't mind me asking, is that how you start every game? Is well, I guess, where does a game come from? Which sounds like a dumb question, but how do you decide... this is a game where you are a flower, or this is a game where you're wandering the desert, or this is a game where the objective is friendship. Where does that start?
So my background is film. I went to the film school. I was kind of initially thinking about going for Pixar and wanted to be a director at Pixar. That's my dream. But during the during that period, our film school started the video game program, and EA donated $8 million.
Holy cow.
A lot of things going on, and I suddenly realized game is actually way younger as a medium compared to film, which is quite matured.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the school is very entrepreneurial. It encourages the students to push the boundaries. And I realized there's a lot more things you can contribute to a younger medium than just trying to find your role and fit in an established medium.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you could compare that to us getting a head start with podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now everybody's got that going too, but it's still pretty young compared.
Yeah, compared to other mediums.
Yeah, and so in the process, I realized, you know, like when I grew up, young people, I mean, old people would say, you need to look into the history to tell the future, which I always thought was like stupid quote. But then I was studying film and was studying history of film, you know, which I'm not really excited about. But in that process, those knowledge I learned have this crazy overlap of how video game industry has grown over time. For the first 40 years of film, people are still just trying to figure out how to, you know, use camera to do what people have already been doing, which is ballet, boxing match on the stage, or they would shoot for stage plays or opera. 40 years, right? People never thought that they can move the camera.
Yeah.
People never thought they can cut the film to edit, you know, in a non-linear format.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Citizen Kane came out, you know, and then people were like, oh, you don't have to shoot the real thing. You can shoot a model, you know.
Yeah, revolutionized storytelling.
Right. So video game is just about 40 years old.
Yeah.
And if you really think about video games, it's a bunch of disjointed things. And most of them are people just trying to capture what other medium can do, like how to drive a car initially, or how to
get across the Oregon Trail with only 80 sweaters.
Right. Throw a rock and see how it hit things. Right.
Yeah.
Physics simulation, really.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen the Citizen Kane of games yet. But if you really understand how film grow in history, it's growing through each individual market. So initially, film is so expensive to make.
Mm-hmm.
It was largely controlled by three major production houses, you know, 20th Century Fox. And, you know, like these are movie
Universal,
production.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the equivalent of, you know, Nintendo, Sony, and EA, Activision, right?
Yeah.
Only big company can make it. Only big company can sell it. movies can only be shown in these theaters. So there's no space for independent creators or independent theaters. Mm-hmm. And then it took them a long time for someone to develop the handheld camera, the Super 8 millimeter. Mm-hmm. That's what the current generation master is growing up with. Steven Spielberg, you know, and J.J. Abrams, they all kind of grew up as a kid playing with camera, right?
Yeah.
And then there was a huge movement in the 1900s late 1900s, is where independent theaters become very popular. You can kind of, every neighborhood has a theater, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's not the big blockbuster movies. You can show some small movies in the theaters. And then that's when the indie movement started to drive the content. And then you have like Hitchcock, which then evolved the thrillers into a major commercial genre. Before that, it was all indie, right?
Yeah.
You know, horror films become big, you know, and, you know, then you have subgenres like the Westerns, right? Then that becomes big. You have film noir that was originally just an indie film, right? But then it's so popular, everybody started mimicking that. And then they got a whole genre, like,
yeah,
off.
And then it goes off the offshoots of spaghetti Westerns. And
sounding very familiar.
So basically, you know, indie is essentially commercially unproven content, right? Mm-hmm. And if it is becoming very, very successful, it immediately becomes a genre and no longer indie anymore. For example, Minecraft.
Yeah.
Sandbox game was indie when Notch was working at his garage. And then when everybody's copying sandbox games, then that's just a major genre. Mm-hmm. So when I thought about what to make, right, and how to, because, you know, you might see me as kind of empathetic, you know, emotional game creator, but I have to know my tricks, know my techniques to be able to pull it out.
Oh, yeah, you did very well.
Right?
I ugly cried on my bathroom floor in the finale of Sky. Absolutely. Tears.
No spoilers.
Right. So if you talk to me, you would think I'm talking about everything using theories. I'm almost like a academic, but that's who I am. So what I realized is that my goal is simple. I want to make more people love games. And there are game genres that overlaps with film.
Mm-hmm.
You can see pretty much every genre, if you put it down on an age and gender distribution, like young to old, men to women, we have captured every single genre that the film has done for men.
Yeah.
From the young genre, like young kids love to be scared. They love horror film. They like superhero comic films. They like action adventures during the summer because, right? And they like sci-fi and they like thrillers, right? And so all these genres are now, I would call the red ocean AAA genres, you know, like even thrillers, there's multiple major franchises that's competing on production values. But if you look at other genres that was popular in novel, in music, in movie, television, like romance, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall any game that make me feel romantic through play. Maybe there are some dialogue that sounds romantic, but that's cinema. That's not game, right? And then the other huge one was comedy. Up till like recently, there's almost no comedic games, right? The only game that is funny was like Monkey Island dialogues, right? But that's literature. That's not funny in terms of interactions. And the only recent funny game started coming is like Goat Simulator, Untitled Goose, right?
Yeah.
And Human Fall Flat. These are like the beginning of comedy, right?
Yeah.
It's like Charlie Chaplin, not even Charlie Chaplin, it's Tom and Jerry, basically.
Yeah.
It's body humor.
Yeah, slapstick.
Charlie Chaplin at least has a higher level of humanity involved in the comedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not there yet, but we're getting there because one of the games we founded was Edith Finch, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Vanishing of Edith Finch. And that is the first black comedy I've ever experienced in the interactive format.
So you think that as an industry, video games are finally evolving to have the
to cover all the emotions. So, yeah. So my think is, it's very simple, right? We don't ever ask you, are you a music listener? Are you a movie goer? Are you a TV watcher? Are you a book reader? But we say, are you a gamer? Mm-hmm. Why? Because in all other medium, we just say, hey, honey, what kind of mood are you in? Let's listen to a music.
Yeah.
Let's go watch a movie. You know, whatever mood you're in, there's a supplement that will match to the desire you want, right? Mm-hmm. But in video games, there's a lot of action adventure stuff, right? You know, every young boy will be having fun enjoying video games. But for a young girl who is more likely to enjoy fantasy and comedy or romantic comedies, mm-hmm. there is no game that produces those emotions. That's no wonder they don't find themselves as an audience for games.
Yeah. So here's actually something that's real quick. I thought that Sky did so well too, is you give people so many tools to express themselves, where it's to mm-hmm. the point where you actually unlock new ways to interact. And I was interacting with people that were not musicians, that were learning songs, and we were teaching each other songs. Because I'm a composer on the side. And one thing that I noticed with the comedy was, you know, Smash Mouth's All Star is like the biggest meme song. People play that, and it's associated with Shrek. I can't tell you how many people I've run into in Sky that start playing All Star on their harp. And then the other characters laugh with the emoji.
Transcends all mediums.
Yeah, it's very like, there's a lot of people very meme aware, and there's a good community that you built with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So for Sky, I want to say is, you know, after Journey, Journey is kind of like, both Flower and Journey are to me more of a my useful expression, which is kind of a avant-garde or maybe on the side of kind of too edgy. I would call it the art house movie, you know, because that's a genre in the movie industry. But usually if you think about, you want to go to work for an art house movie, you kind of have to be in the mood, right? Mm-hmm. And you want to be
like some kind of
challenged to see something that's different. And if you actually look at the chart where art house movie is, it's kind of like older aged audience, mm-hmm. But actually enjoyed both by men and women. So I'm kind of like, I know the theory, I know the market data, but then also then when we make our game like Journey, the most thing we heard is, this is the first game that my wife sit next to me and watched the whole game together and cried. Oh, this is the first game my daughter played and finished. But at the same time, I know PlayStation is, particularly in America, was like 97% ownership of men.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And knowing that our game actually could attract women and converting them into liking games as medium, but only being sold on a platform that is 97% male is kind of like a wasted opportunity.
Right.
You know, like, because my goal is to make more people love games. So that's why we thought about it. And, you know, do we want to be a company that continue to make art house games for men, or should we be a company that make games that more people can potentially find it enjoyable? That's when we decide to move to cross-platform, like all platforms.
Yeah, the phone even.
Yeah, and the phone is the most challenging platform in the development. So we want to work on that most challenging platform first, and then later to port to the easier platforms. So we are kind of approaching things the reverse order. Like most game company would be like, all right, let's make the console game first, and then later port it to the phone. And we were like, if we can touch people on the phone, then imagine when it blown up on the big screen, it definitely would work.
Yeah.
And so then the other thing is, once you're actually on the phone, your audience is not just the hardcore players. You will have people who never played the game. You have kids. You have older people.
I was playing with my 3-year-old daughter earlier.
Yeah, we have actually quite a few 60-plus players. They really like the game.
That's so great.
And so what I was trying to do with Sky is that, okay, can we adjust the emotion to be a bit more friendly to everyone rather than being the, you know, kind of the avant-garde outhouse? So I looked at the emotional chart, and I find this little place, which is quite interesting. It's like, if you look at the middle, where men and women, old and young, all really liked, is a combination of fantasy settings, comedy, plus art house.
I want to see that chart.
It's I can send you the link later. Comedy plus art house, and there's a little bit touch of drama. And a lot of animated movie was also a genre currently put there. And that was like, that's like literally every single thing that Pixar or Disney makes.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, Sky is a Pixar shirt come to life in a game.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that because that was like, I'm really going for it because I was like, can I elicit an emotion similar to a Pixar or Disney movie? Because I want a family to be able to enjoy it together. So, you know, like some of my hardcore fans will be like, oh, Sky is too childish, right? You know, like compared to Journey. Mm-hmm. It's not cool, right? But
well, it's not,
I think that's
what's enough for them, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of like, you know, if you shifted the emotion, the audience would shift as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I felt that were more likely to reach more people.
And those people are just big babies that are afraid of the krill anyway.
So, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, it sounds like there's equal parts passion and science that go into the beginnings, the roots of a game development. Is that kind of where Sky started in trying to find out how to reach everyone?
Yeah, like there's a spiritual part of the game. I think you can feel it at the end. That is what I want to say. Mm-hmm. But then there's a lot of just very rational analytics. Because after all, I have to raise money to get funding to work on this. I have to convince, you know, very cold, calculated, you know, investors why this is worth putting money in. Like, I have to convince them through rational thoughts, right? So it's not easy for me.
So one thing that pops up about Sky all the time and kind of what piqued our interest in it is it's a game centered around altruism, and one thing that every article points out is you can help people out by exchanging or buying candles or unlocking,
giving gifts and things. But I feel like a lot of the articles that have covered you, like you were mentioning earlier, they haven't gotten to the heart of the fact that that's the theme of the game,
of the game,
not just something you could do in the game.
Do you feel like, well, first of all, I also saw that people called you the only altruist in the gaming industry. Do you think you yourself as an altruist?
I have not heard about this. This is like first time I hear this.
Oh. I'll have to find the article.
I'm flattered to hear that. But let me tell you this. It's not like I see myself as a giver. I always see myself as the lover of games. I just want more people to love it. Mm-hmm. And in the process of doing that, I believe that only by showing people the beautiful things, that the thing that makes them become better people, can we earn the respect. And so I'm more of a romanticist. You know, like if you look at all the painters, right, there are people who paint very dark stuff, which it's also very truthful because darkness reveals truth. Actually, I really like Dark Souls. But, you know, you can take things in a kind of realism as a style, which is very gray, right? The realistic game is kind of like, you know, has humanity is both beautiful and ugly, right? Bright and dark. Mm-hmm. But then you have the romanticist, you know, who would be making movie like Emily, you know, or The Sound of Music, right? Yeah. It is more beautiful than reality, but it captures some level of truth. That is the beauty of the human interactions. Because I think if I'm a painter, I'm trying to make a beautiful sunset. If I'm a musician, I want to make something that's classic, right? That is, you know, truly timeless. But as a game creator, I'm trying to capture something through interactions, and it's mostly reflecting the human nature. And I wanted to capture the beautiful side of the human nature, and that's why I end up trying to portray the altruism, the compassions, and the community and the connections of humanity. I mean, there's plenty of darkness about human nature. You can find that in most of the, you know, PUBG games, you know, the survival horror games. Awesome. It was like revealing the other side of the truth, right? Like what human is. But I feel like, you know, we are the minority right now, because most of the game, human nature just spills out in virtual worlds because, you know, there's no laws and morality there. So, like, evoking darkness is actually easier in the games. Yeah. And so trying to elicit something positive formed humanity is kind of the challenging part, which I enjoy doing. Can I show why we are beautiful? Why we are worth saving? That's kind of like my thing, right? I haven't really been working a multiplayer game until Journey, and I realized how hard it is because, you know, our instinct has been kind of heavily tainted by traditional games, which is all about building fun mechanics. It was like almost counterintuitive in terms of how you design things to make people be nice. Like, people are jerks, right? They're babies. Babies are jerks.
Especially anonymously.
Right. And so how do you, make that happen naturally? It's definitely a craft.
And it's worked. I mean, again, you've probably watched test data and play data all day. But for a personal experience, I get to the last stage in Sky.
No spoilers.
But people would spend all of their time making sure that they've got plenty of stars on their cape, and they'll sacrifice them just to go back and save one character that they don't know. And I've watched it happen where I'll hold someone's hand and we'll go back into the comets and go back into the danger just to help someone have a better experience with their ending.
Yeah.
And I haven't experienced that before. That's what it was like. I gotta email him. What's his website?
Yeah, actually, that's true. I felt like for Sky, it's a unique game, it's a live game. Mm-hmm. I would say the ending is not quite perfect. I mean, if I have time, I wanted to make improvements to that. But for a very long time, what I've been talking to the team is I really wish there's a real sacrifice in this game. Because, a lot of players complain about, how come I can lose the things I have, right? Mm-hmm. Because I felt like without sense of loss, you can't really sacrifice for others. So it's kind of like hand in hand. I cried for the player who helped me in the last level, even during the development. Now the game is awesome. It's quite different. It's interesting because now I realize most of the people are touched not because of the game itself, but because of others.
Yeah, you create the tool for them to be able to communicate in that way, even without language.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. I feel I could have done better, I need to improve the game. Not as we talk about it.
You're always going to be your biggest critic, though, too.
Yeah.
I feel that same way. Again, I said I was a composer. I'll write something that I worked really hard on and five people will listen. Then I'll write something that it took me 2 seconds and I'm like, I don't like how this came out. And it'll be on a big podcast. And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
that's the challenge of creativity.
And creativity. You'll always be trying to perfect that one thing, right? Mm-hmm. So with Sky, it sounds like it started off with trying to create this kind of interaction between players that wasn't there in the gaming industry until this game. Was the altruism or the sacrifice something that came about later? Was that also there from the start?
It is there from the start. Actually, in the creation of Journey, I really wanted to elicit that feeling of sacrifice. You can kind of see that, but most people kind of didn't catch it up. So at the end of the game, when you die in Journey,
there's a lot of mirroring. There's a similarity between them.
So what happened is Journey was based on the kind of classic work from Joseph Campbell. I don't know if you guys are familiar with his work. So Joseph Campbell is basically this hermit who spent 10 years in a cabin in a mountain and read all the stories that's from, the Japanese Shinto stories, Native American, European classics, South American, every single story. So this guy, during the Big Depression, locked himself in a cabin for 10 years, reading every single story. And then he see the big data. Like today we use AI to read, to find patterns, but he literally read everything.
he was the neural network.
Yes, he was a neural network. So he see this pattern of every single story ever told and been passed by generations for hundreds of thousands of years are all the same story. They all share the same structure. And so he wrote a book called A Hero with a Thousand Faces.
In 1949, then, according to his Wikipedia page.
Right. And then George Lucas read this book when he was writing Star Wars. And he was like, oh my God, I have totally got my story structure wrong. I need to follow this archetype.
Interesting.
And then his movie become a modern day mythical story. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And so the other one who faithfully followed this story structure is The Matrix, the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Again, felt like a modern day myth. Like, and so I was like, how come nobody was adapting this? People call it the monomyth. It's the same mythical story we've been telling for millennia, right? Mm-hmm. And how come we never adopted the monomyth into an interactive format? So I was literally trying to faithfully execute that, and that is journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really surprised that the many people who find this game very spiritually connecting with them. I ran to the Buddhists, they were like, this is a Buddhism game. I ran to the Christians and they were like, this must be the Christian game.
Yeah.
And but because, you know, that's all the stories that the people has been talking about. But anyway, why am I talking about this? In the end of the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell concluded that this story would not be worth told through thousands of years if in the end the hero does not return and bring the fortune that he retrieved back to the community. And it's like if a bank robber just stole a bunch of money and left, nobody will be passing this story to the future generation because it has no benefit for our existence, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, even if you see Fast and Furious 6, even after they robbed the money, they have to give it back to the community, right? they can't just be, just for themselves. So that's why at the end of Journey, I really wanted to make his pass away a meaningful thing for the community. But what is the community of Journey? It was all the living beings. So as his star passes through the credits, you will see cloth kelps starting to grow. You will see other players start to pay attention to his stars, and you will see little cloth strands and fish coming out, giving birth to new life. Essentially, that's kind of like a gesture. And it was kind of like the sacrifice of his life to help the ecosystem. But people didn't quite pick it up.
Yeah.
So when I moved to Sky, I wanted to make it more well-pronounced, make a calibration. People used to say a lot of directors, they would spend their entire life making the same movie, trying to make it better. And I felt like from Journey to Sky, or from Flower to Journey, it's very much like I'm trying to kind of perfect that craft.
Mm-hmm. What's beautiful about that is you built the brand too. It's like mm-hmm. you have the monomyth like converted into two stories, I would argue now with Sky mm-hmm. and Journey.
Yeah, there's still more work to be done. Like I wouldn't say this is the masterpiece. No.
Oh well, I have your ending fixed though. I've got it for you. So,
oh no, here we go.
Yeah, here's what you do. At the end of Sky.
Yeah.
It deletes your mom's contact from your phone. You can never call her again.
There's sacrifice. It.
Yep,
or maybe it dials her number.
It yep,
that's the sacrifice.
See, the thing is, I've been telling the team. I think we should delete all the friends you've made after you died.
Oh no, so painful.
but wouldn't that be more meaningful as an expression?
I think so.
I think that would be beautiful. But then I keep remembering what makes the game so meaningful for me. Is signing in, and there's this girl in South Korea mm-hmm. that I play with, and she'll just like send me a heart every day, and we'll go, and she'll be like, "Hey, I got this really good run through the forest. I want to show you where all the best lights are, how to get it faster."
Yeah,
right.
But what if you had to give that up?
This is definitely. I mean, I literally thought about this, and I was like, "What if it's temporary? What if you can run into the girl again and rediscover that was the one you've made friends with before?"
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah.
Because have you seen Cloud Atlas? Not the movie, but the book. There's in the Buddhism, there's this concept of reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
But when you reincarnate, you forget everything, right? So your former wife may run into you in the future as a friend, but you don't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think you did kind of capture that with, again, I guess we have to get into spoiler territory, but it's almost worth it at this point.
I don't know, earmuffs.
Thank you. Earmuffs for people that don't want them. When you die in the sky and you come back and you've got one star and you're like, nah, I got to get that black cape so I can tell everybody that I've done my time. You know, like people think, oh, you're just a new player again.
Yeah.
But you know where everything is.
Yeah, it can. I mean, I really, really love this project, Sky, because it allowed me to witness humanity, not just through the player's perspective, but through a community.
Yeah, through the covers of Smash Mouth.
and the different culture. I mean, like,
it's a new,
my gosh, how different the players are from different countries.
Yeah,
like the things they care about is completely different. Mm. But I'm just loving it because I'm like, my goal is to make everybody love games more than better.
Yeah, and I think what's so cool is like now there are full meme pages that people make on Instagram just dedicated to Sky. And they'll have new things that I'll discover about the game that I didn't know. Like Rainbow Bridge has become so hugely popular. Was this originally just a glitch? Was that intended? What's going on with Rainbow Bridge?
Oh my God, this is going to be the first leak of the Rainbow Bridge.
Oh man, okay, great.
Do you want me to tell you why it's being created?
Please.
Absolutely.
All right, so we were trying to optimize the graphics because the game runs slow on the smaller phone and gets hot very quickly. Mm. One big reason is because we have these clouds. These are giant clouds with lots of polygons, and it has collisions in it. So it can block the things behind it. Mm-hmm. Right? And so one engineer was trying to optimize the performance. So he was like, well, what's the point of having collisions in these clouds when they're in the background? There's nothing for them to block. Mm-hmm. So let's take out the collisions, right? It saves the performance. But the problem with that is then the sun will shine its light through the clouds as if it didn't get blocked. And you will see the sun in the middle of the clouds, which looks quite strange. And I understand how much performance it saves. So I was like, how about this? Let me just put an invisible model, like a cube, that has a collision so I can block the sun. And so in the process, I was trying to fit a cube into the shape of the clouds.
man.
And I didn't even bother changing the texture. So it has the default, like this kind of a, you know, Atlas texture with all the random colors on it.
Yeah.
And I forgot to turn off rendering. So it's still being rendered. But I thought it was just in the middle of the cloud. Anyways, nobody's going to see it, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Just to block the sun. But then there's always these,
yeah, thought too, you know, soon,
curious people. And they find this cube and they find the rainbow texture on it, you know. Now it's a tourist spot. I can't remove it.
But you know what's fun about it? I know that I watched some interviews I think I watched an IGN one or something. You're talking about growing up playing Sega Genesis. And I grew up playing Pokemon and stuff like that. And you'd go on the playground and your friend would be like, oh man, if you go to this level at this spot, mm-hmm. you could. And that's how people used to communicate with these things. Like, there's no internet to look up glitches and hacks. And now in the community, it's become like it's mimicked that time from when I was a child of, oh man, did you know in the first level you could go up and there's this giant rainbow cube in the sky?
I was just talking to my brother about that today, about, and this is timely, of all the Pokemon leaks. And he doesn't want to look at them. I was like, I don't really care about spoilers that much, especially for Pokemon. So I went and looked at him. I was like, Jake, that was my brother's name. This is the closest that we're ever going to get to that playground chatter. Like, that's why people data mine, I think. It's mm-hmm. it's almost forbidden. But now we know the truth of the Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It's like, how to say that? I really miss those early days when we are still just sharing things through the word of mouth.
It's something you can't capture anymore.
Yeah, and I'm still trying to do that. I'm still hiding things in the game.
Yeah. Like maybe some Easter eggs somewhere.
Right. Hopefully that, you know, the YouTube guys doesn't catch up so quickly. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, don't worry. They already misled. I'm working on misleading them, too. There was someone that said they were going to sit in those eggs to try to hatch them in the rainy forest.
Oh, the real Easter egg. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was difficult for us to hide the secret level you guys know about.
Mm-hmm.
And we hide it so well that we tested with the beta community for a straight week. Nobody found how to get there. But then we're like, maybe this is too hard. If 1,000 people can't find it in a week, maybe nobody's going to know this new content. So eventually somebody found it in beta, but then once it goes live, it's just instant because someone put a video up and people just, follow the video. It's in an age where secrets is difficult to keep.
But what makes it so interesting too is I found out about it in game. Uh-huh. Like another character told me in game and then took my hand and led me there.
Yeah.
I didn't find it on video or in a forum.
Oh, I'm envious of your experience. I wish I could feel that.
Well, taking a step back, this is a huge step back, but you're talking about beta testers and stuff. And I was just kind of curious because I had read that some of your early play tests didn't go so well. People didn't really latch onto the mechanics. And I was mm-hmm. kind of curious as to where the various mechanics came from, how you landed on different gestures or the music or...
And don't worry, I think we knocked out probably like 10 of the questions on Reddit already.
Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted to bring this, the instrument, because it's not a design from me and I love it. Because
mm-hmm.
I have no music background. I grew up being a geek and learning computer coding and mm-hmm. drawing, so I never had time to play music. So there's no way I will come up with this idea. So one of our field engineer, which is like someone who's a designer but also engineer, that use the code to elicit emotions, but that's what we call field engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So John Hughes, he told me, so one day he comes in, he's like, hey, you have all these buttons to do different pose. What if they make different sound? Initially we were just trying to make different shout sound, right? So then they made a prototype where the sound was, just the music notes. And without my awareness or approval, they developed the whole thing, the piano, and they just showed me one day, it's already there. I'm like, okay, I guess since it's already made, let's just put it in the game, because usually I will cut things, right? but they actually made it, and it was so popular. And then I was just asking him, I'm like, how did you come up with this idea? Like, why are you... so certain that this is gonna work? And so he told me one day. So she comes from DigiPen, which is a gaming school. They have a mm-hmm. program in Singapore. So this guy John, he
went there from
Canadian.
2011 to 2015.
Creep.
Yeah,
I'm on his LinkedIn.
So he went there to Singapore, which is a country where not many people were speaking his language, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was quite lonely there as well as the few foreign students. So one day he was in his room, he was like playing, either he was playing the violin or he was playing the piano. And then he heard like two floor up, there was someone playing the other instrument. And so they had this duet.
That's incredible.
Playing with each other, right? And he felt incredibly connected to this person who he know nothing about, right? Probably don't even speak the same language, but that moment made him felt not alone. And so he also said the reason he made the keyboard 15 keys rather than the typical piano, which is much bigger.
160.
Yeah, it's all major.
Yeah,
because he doesn't want it to be a thing only the professionals can show off.
Yeah.
He wants something simple enough that anybody can play around, and they mostly sounded pretty good.
But I would pay at least $10 for some sharp notes, I'm just saying. I can play a lot.
Ka-ching.
There you go. There's your in for
money
the
money printing machine.
Yeah, tell that to the investors. But go on, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so he made it so simple that in the end I'm like, but I still can't play because I have no musical background. Can you make some tutorial for us? Which then comes with the music sheet. And now at least I can, remember a few music sheet and I can play some music. That's kind of like also getting me started interested in,
that's awesome.
In music.
Other people in the game can teach it to you. Yeah.
There was a moment where I, again, I went to a little glitchy area. Sorry to tell you, I found it on top of the forest. And where was this? This was in when it gets sunny in the middle deep. Of the misty forest. Yeah, okay. So okay. I went up on top and I played Song of Storms from Zelda on my harp, mm-hmm. and the other person played it better in a different key. Yeah. And then they taught me one type of melody that bum 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 bum. And I learned that just from note by note, they played it. And then they played it, the melody on top of it. And we had a duet. I've never talked to them again. It was beautiful. Yeah. And I haven't had that experience in the game.
I think that's what makes that game company beautiful people.
Look at that.
That kind of stuff. And I was like, normally I'd ask where you get inspiration from. It kind of sounds like you guys just get it from
real life.
The human experience.
Yeah.
I think our life is the biggest inspiration. And I always say that many times, which are almost 100% true, is that the living conditions of the developers will reflect in the game itself. Mm-hmm. And you can also imagine how difficult it is for us to develop Journey at the very end.
So then how mean were you to the people that made the krill?
I wouldn't say developing these games are like a joyful experience. It was a lot of
stress.
A lot of stress.
Yeah.
So the krill needs to be scary. It needs to really hurt you.
And except now that all the memes are people trying to ride the krill. People want to jump on their back.
Of course they do.
At least on Tumblr they do.
So my favorite gaming hero is Fumito Ueda. Mm-hmm. Shadow of the Colossus and Ico and Last Guardian.
I just played it for the first time. Yeah.
Really?
Right.
Yeah,
and so one thing people would be saying, oh yeah, your game is kind of remind me of Shadow of the Colossus, right?
Yeah, I got that.
So there's a one key difference between TDC game and other artistic game is that, you know, your hero cannot overcome monsters.
That's the human condition, isn't it?
that is to me a very important thing. I think it's almost become my personal style. There's a long subject to talk about why.
I've googled maybe 30 minutes how to kill the krill. How do you get rid of
them? You can't.
And then, I reflected, and I was like, you know what? Sometimes bad things happen in life, and you just gotta make the best of it. And I was like, my heart. I've been touched.
Right. I mean, can you stop a flood or a fire? Yeah. You know, things happen, and, you know, that's, I think, today we're living in a world where we are super empowered. Like, everything is not a problem. Every problem has an answer, you know, on Google. which kind of is not, I would say, is not fitting to how we evolved as human beings. Mm-hmm. You know, 15,000 years ago, we are still largely living a small community of 50 to 100 people, right? And our connection with each other is very tight. We're social animals. That's why when we feel lonely, your body will give you a signal that you have to do something about it, right?
Yeah, we talked about that at length on our show.
Right. And when you speak in front of hundreds of people, you feel nervous, because if you do something wrong and you got despised by a community or village, you're dead.
You're kicked from the tribe. Right? Yeah.
You get killed simply by people not providing for you or not protecting you. You're dead.
Yeah.
So we are trained to be very, very sensitive, to feel like we have a place in the tribe, like we are doing things irreplaceable by others to keep the tribe surviving. So that's how we feel. We're fully fulfilled as our role to be here, right? Yeah. But today, most of the jobs are replaceable, you know, and that doesn't give you a sense of purpose. And
that's why I'm envious of you with this, because this is all... I have not met many people that their drive and success is from such a genuine place where it's not, oh, what's going to make the most money?
Yeah.
You know, and
like
it's
Madden 2020.
Well, yeah. Because if you're in any corporate job, you know, there's plenty of other people that could do the same thing. You're correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like my very favorite book is The Alchemist. If you haven't read it, it's a treat. Basically, the theme of The Alchemist is that everyone who was born to this world has a legend of themselves to be told. And there's only two type of people, the people who are still pursuing their legend and the people who believe the lie that, you know, it may not belong to them. And it was basically a book to encourage you to find, you know, why you're truly here, a job, a role that only you can do, because I do believe that is everybody's rights.
We've got a new series that we could start doing now, Genova's Book Club.
Yeah. No, I've got these pulled up here. I'm going to start reading these.
The Alchemist.
Hey, it's just me, your friend Nick, and I want to take a quick break to say thanks for listening to this. We had a lot of fun with Genova Chen, and it was, you might have been able to tell John was kind of fangirling, and so the rest of this episode is John mostly fangirling over Sky, Children of the Light, and answering questions from the Sky community. So if you haven't played Sky, you should go play it. But if you haven't played Sky, most of the rest of this is geared specifically towards Sky for Sky players. So just keep that in mind. It's still a good conversation. We learned about like a book, I think, that's really good that I'm going to have to go read now. So I should also say here that if you want to support us, as always, follow us on Facebook, go to Twitter, leave us a review on iTunes. What are you doing with yourself? Or just leave us a review wherever you're listening to us. If you're a fan of Sky, let us know. We want to hear from you. Send pictures of your hair to Genova. You can also, if you want to support us, of course, you can always go to patreon.com/flyingmachine. We're proud members of the Flying Machine Network. It's a fun little community where we just try to make things that we think you'll enjoy. And you can help us by kicking a few bucks our way. That's always super nice to do. And in return, you get bonus episodes. Like next month, we're going to talk about my adventures in Los Angeles and Mississippi. So we'll get back to our conversation with Genova. Enjoy the rest of what we have.
Well, I've got a couple of things that Reddit World was thirsty to know the answers for. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of these we did cover already, and some of them are a little like funny or silly, so I thought that was cool to have in there too. Mm-hmm. But let's see if I've got some of these on here that you might be able to answer. I'm sure there's some you can't too, for spoilery reasons. But the one that was at the very top was 26 upvotes. This person had winter slash icy said, are you going to add back some of the winter emotes or add the aviary back in?
Yes to both.
Oh man, awesome. All right, will they add new
creatures? Now you're just getting excited. Yeah,
will they add new creatures to the game, such as, and then they blocked it up for spoilers, winter season bird, daily quest turtle, and dead sky kids on the shore island?
So we definitely want to bring more creatures into the world. Currently, as of this very moment, we are not working on it, but this has been discussed heavily.
I'm sure. I mean, you're only trying to get it onto major consoles, Android,
doing a lot of work,
pitch it to everybody. Yeah.
By the way, the Android thing was such a difficult mess. Yeah. I'm now realized why most of the indies don't have Android builds. It was so much more work than we thought. And we're biting this thing. And if you wonder why there isn't enough amazing new thing coming fast enough, because we are strangled by the swamp of Android.
Right, goodness. Man. That's cool. It sounds like that would be a tough thing to transition over with their control systems and redoing everything from scratch, it sounds like. What else we have? People want a sneak peek of the next season. They're so curious. I think they have to wait. But this person also added, this is AdNexi, will you be adding more curly hairs styles?
What happened is when we were in beta, there are players who say, hey, I noticed most of the hairstyle are either Asian or Western. Mm-hmm. And I unfortunately don't have those hairstyles. Can you add more hairstyle to represent us? And we were like, oh, geez. Yeah. How did we forget about that? You know, because what happened is most of our studio are, you know, Western and Eastern developers.
Yeah.
We don't have enough, you know, Middle Eastern and South American or African developers. So we kind of just trying to make hairstyle that we know of.
Yeah, I'm still looking for mine. I was from New York. I grew up in a band. I'm very emo. But we'll get there.
Can't have them all.
we do have a Japanese emo hairstyle.
There you go, John.
I know, but I gotta get more hearts, Jennifer.
you need to send us a photo of your hairstyle, right?
There you go.
Literally, there are people requesting their hairstyle to be made. So
you're gonna get some
we
tweets
go
later.
Ahead doing that.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Send us the hair you want. So yeah, then we try to make a few curly hairs, and people seem to really like it. As of right now, I would just hope that if you want a particular curly hairstyle, just send it to us, because you know, I personally, I'm not a good barber. You know, like I have a low taste of hairstyles.
Yeah, so it's better.
Yeah, it's better if you guys just send it to us, and we would try to do as better as a job as we can to capture that.
Cool. Open invitation, friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. It's where's the best place to send stuff like that? On Twitter, on Instagram. I know you guys have a bunch of what was it, Fan Art Fridays, was it, that you do on Instagram?
Yeah.
That's a good place to do it too. Okay, let's see what else I got on here. This was a really tough one. I don't know if you're gonna be able to answer this. Will they fix the umbrellas to toggle open and closed?
So Umbrella is a 5-year-old gameplay.
What? And it just came out.
Yeah. So I first came up the Umbrella idea, and I was really, really moved when someone just to share the Umbrella with me and just kind of hang out in the rain level and just not really do anything. And I was really touched by it. So I always know we want Umbrella in the game. And back then, and even during the development of the Umbrella, you can always open and close it. But before we put it out into the live, I turned off the open and close.
Oh, no.
Because what happened is when you close it, you're just kind of holding it like a candle, a giant candle of a closed umbrella. And it was kind of cool, but it creates a lot of a gameplay problem. It's like, what happens if you want to hold hands now? Or what happens if you want to take your candle out? And it just gets a lot of situations kind of tricky. Eventually we just took it off because, you know, unless we have a real strong reason why you want the umbrella to be closed, it's kind of right. Like, when it's open, you can jump off high buildings and your fall speed will be reduced. Right? It's useful for the flight. But if you want to close it, usually you just kind of want to free your hands. So
yeah.
if we are using umbrella as a sword, maybe I will then
can't stab
the
krill.
Nope. Yeah. So
that's cool. So okay, I got two more. I think I'll pick off here. Mm-hmm. But one of them was about one of my favorite characters in the game, Oreo. They're asking if there are any more personal pets, because I am a dog rescuer. I got 12 puppies at my house, and I was so excited to stand. I told Nick for about 30 minutes in a circle, not knowing what was going to happen, and Oreo comes up.
Yeah, I mean, Oreo is a meme. I mean, I work on the game all the time, so my wife always complains that I don't spend enough time with her. And, you know, kind of every year, the birthday gift is like my way to make it back. and I know she loves Oreo because, you know, Oreo is with her for 7 years. Uh-huh. And I thought, well, this is going to win her heart if I get Oreo in the game. Right? Cause, you know,
and now I follow Oreo on Instagram. Just Oreo and Sky.
Yeah. So Oreo is really, really cute. And you have to see it in person to realize how small the dog is. Basically, anytime we take Oreo out into public, you just hear a lot of like gasping of people. It's like, oh my God, is that real? You know, it's like you just can't even move if you're in a mall. And a lot of people were like, how come you're not sharing Oreo with more people? You know, he's already 7 years old. You know, he's only going to live long enough, not too long in the world. So, right. And I just thought, well, maybe if I can capture a tiny little bit of him, that would be there forever.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, he's very cute. I mean, even in pictures, and I'm sure it doesn't do him justice because he's 4 pounds, it says.
Yeah.
Cool.
Did you have one more question?
Yeah, I had one more on here, and I thought that this was good to tie it all together. And that was, what was something that... Wait, where was this? What was your... This is from Flying Cat Blanket. What was your favorite idea that didn't get put into the game?
Didn't get put in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So during the early days of development, the auntie-looking guy from God from Rain, I know there's a lot of fan art about this lady with the huge dreads, ponytails, and the hammer.
Yes.
She used to be... a villain, and she used to be the owner of the umbrella in the rain level, which makes sense, right? But her job was the witch that eats the kids. We were making an asynchronous multiplayer game where whoever the witch ate will become the witch. And we're making this game based on the werewolf, where, you know, even though the possessed player is the witch, to the other kids, he looked like just normal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so cool.
So he can only prey on other kids when they are alone. So you will be like walking with five people in the rain level, knowing one of them is the witch. And you know his goal is to isolate the group and, you know, prey on the individuals. And so it's kind of like, you know, guessing like who is the witch, who is not, right? And it's like a real werewolf game, you know, like the social werewolf game. Yeah. And you would start talking, you know, kind of trying to talk up, come up reasons why the group should divide, you know. And sometimes the witch will have a friend, so they will like join in to convince you that why they are not the witch and the other two are the witches. So it's kind of like a very kind of very, you know, like nowadays there's games like Friday the 13th or, you know, Dead by Daylight, which, you know, kind of doing that asymmetrical game. But it was very, very tense, and it was very social because you were trying to convince people like you're not the witch. That was quite fun. But at the time, we just ran out of time to kind of contain that game to be part of Sky rather than kind of evolve that into another, like, you know, a Dead by Daylight game. So eventually we just felt it was too much for us to chew, so that was kind of dropped. But hopefully if Sky is doing well, I can bring that back, because that's certainly
That'd be such
replayable.
A fun story mode. Yeah, like just like even just a play mode.
I'm just in here imagining that. It sounds a lot of fun. I have one more question for you, just to kind of round things out, which is, you kind of talked about the response you got from Flower or Journey, people saying that you're beautiful people. What kind of responses have you seen from Sky at this point? Like, I read that a couple that met on Sky got married.
I think so far the most memorable is the 67-year-old Hawaiian grandma. She said, "I never played Mario or Sonic. You know, video game is not my thing, but I discovered this app on the App Store, so I downloaded it. And I met quite a few cool young people. Then we become friends. And they took me through the entire game. I cried so hard over the 30 minutes of the Eden level. And I cried again when we reached the top. And thank you so much for making this game, because it reminded me that I am a being of love. I forgot about that for a long time, and I realized that how important it is to have connections with others. And it was initially I was a little bit confused as for like what does she mean by realizing I'm a being of love. Then I started to think most of the older people might be alone, and they have no access to others. And how would I imagine as I get older and uglier and weaker, who is going to love me, right? Yeah. And for her to find love in the game, you know, I mean, clearly this is not, you know, like a kind of sexual relationship, but having truly friends and having true connections, you know, it meant a lot to her. That was something that I never thought about, how a game could mean and can bring value to older people.
It's powerful.
Mm-hmm. And to think, if you were in Ranch, you cooked Angry Birds, Genova. This is
why you gotta keep making games.
No, but on a serious note, that's why I felt the way I did with wanting to reach out. And I'm so grateful that you came on to do this and talk with us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for wanting to listen, because we usually don't have the right audience. And I'm glad you guys actually enjoy this, because that's more important.
Yeah.
Well, we'd love to have you back if you're down for it. I mean, you've got a lot of insight. I'm so curious about all of your influences with this, too. If we ever cover something on The Alchemist, we know who to go to.
Yeah, now I gotta read that.
Sure, do some homework and then we can talk again.
That sounds great. Now, in the meantime, because I am a slow reader, is there anywhere that that people, if they wanted to find you like on Twitter, is there anywhere they can interact with you?
I mean, I actually don't tweet very often. I don't know.
Oreo and Sky on Instagram.
There you go.
Well, you can follow my Twitter, which is Genova Chen. Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to interact with us, the best way is to reach out to the community. And you know, if you have a complaint and you want people to pay attention, you can at my Twitter. Like nowadays, I'm just mostly pay attention to dispute and
get off there. Complaints. Go on Instagram.
On social media, that's like what most of my day is.
Oh man,
responding to fires.
I hope you don't have a template that says "I'm so sorry," blank.
All right. Well, I think we'll let you get back to your day, but thank you again for joining us. And
thank you. And I hope everybody enjoy the content. And if they all like it, we'll do more.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. Yeah, I'm excited to post this in the group. A lot of people on here in the Reddit community would be so excited to have their answers. Like personally answered from you too. So
and the Rainbow
fun.
Bridge.
Yeah, finally.
Oh, I wanna do a poll. Should we get rid of the Rainbow Bridge or make it a real Rainbow Bridge?
See, this is why you're getting so many angry comments on Twitter. I think I know how that poll's gonna go.
You can't get rid of it. Not now. All right.
All right.
Well, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I'm still Nick.
Good night, guys.
I'm still John.
Yeah. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
I give you the incredible flying machine.